The system is not really geared to what we need right now, what you are asking for. That is a failing. It is a failing. I mean, let's admit it. The fact is, the way the system was set up is that the public health component that Dr. Redfield was talking about was a system where you put it out there in the public and a physician asks for it and you get it. The idea of anybody getting it easily, the way people in other countries are doing it, we're not set up for that. Do I think we should be? Yes, but we're not.
It is Friday, March 13th. Yes, Friday the 13th, everybody, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop Podcast, Quarantined Edition. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, well, it's a pandemic, and Fox News is killing its viewers. That's right. Oh, and a lot has happened in the presidential race, and Sean and Kevin, well, you know, Kevin, you know, we'll talk about where things are in the presidential race and what the way forward looks like for Bernie Sanders and the movement and everyone else. But the big issue that's on everybody's mind,
toilet paper,
coronavirus, COVID-19. You know, that's it. That's going to occupy a good portion of today's podcast. It's going to be a little bit of a freewheeling day. Governor Wolf orders significant closures in Montgomery County after a number of cases in the county jumped to 13. That was yesterday. I'm sure that number is going up today. And heads up, everybody. Milton Friedman's disciples are chomping at the bit. Never let a good crisis go to waste, right? And as Mark Herlsheim wrote in the Inside Higher Ed, public universities may not be able to handle the impact of the coronavirus. That's after years of budgetary starvation. And our own PASA universities, well, as they close and move to all online instruction due to coronavirus, the for-profit curriculum delivery services are going to be like vultures over roadkill. And if you have to stay at home for work due to the coronavirus, will you be paid if you live in PA? Not unless you live in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. And for everyone else, you're screwed. Google tells its employees to stay home, telecommute. But not so fast if you're a contract worker. For example, there's a great article in The Guardian about the Google workers out there in Pittsburgh. All the official Google employees were told to go home. But if you were a contract worker, and there's a whole lot of them, you said, nope, we can't give you at-home access to our privileged services, so therefore, you got to go to work, suckers. Today's last call, do we have some beer releases this week. Free Will is releasing one of my all-time favorites this Saturday, Safe Word, an Imperial IPA with mangoes and habaneros. Ugh, I love it. I have to say that I thought there was another one coming out this week too as well, but maybe I'm wrong. But since we missed last week's podcast, I didn't tell you what was going on. One of my other favorites, Orange Colored Malcontents, a new one called Sun Servants, another new one called Truth About Birds. They're all come out. We'll talk a little about that in today's last call. I'm also going to give some shout out to some of the awesome folks down at Saucony Creek Brewing in Kutztown. Ahead of my now like infinitely extended spring break, it would seem, I picked up a bunch of cans from the brewery that I hadn't tried yet. So I'll talk about that in today's last call. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you download the Rick Smith Show podcast daily on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. And you can watch it every night, right? Streams live on Twitter, so go check it out. We want a progressive future, folks. I'm exhausted, I got to say. It's been like an emotionally trying week, it seems. But if we want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. You can help support Hold No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We'll be expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our lives, the fight of the future. And that's even become more true after this coronavirus stuff. But we are all in for the fight. We need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. And help keep media in the movement, movement in the media. Become a member for those $5 a month by going to patreon.com/RCPress today. And it, all, for all those folks out there, I've been talking about this, my little mini podcast from last week. I told you a little bit about some of the things we're going to be trying out. Unsolicited, a little kind of patrons only feature that's going to kind of go up a little bit more, kind of less newsy, more kind of thinking through some of the implications of some different pieces. I'm going to start doing some of that. And I also did the first live show that we actually had some call-ins. It was actually kind of pretty cool. That one's not available. I just did it as a test to check it out. But I told Sean about it. Basically, Podbean has got a great new kind of live show feature that we can do. So you're going to be seeing more of that coming up too as well. So pretty cool. So there it is. Sean, I have to say, I feel a little discombobulated this week. I think just to kind of set the stage for today's kind of show, we started this week, right, with the all-important primaries, right? The Michigan primary, the Washington primary, the Missouri, Mississippi. What else am I leaving out? Leaving something else out.
Washington.
I said Washington. There's a, anyways, Idaho. The primaries, and it was this lead up to this, and then Bernie Sanders was basically decimated. It was a sad day for any kind of progressive hope. Not even if you're just a Bernie Sanders, if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, but if you're kind of involved with kind of trying to push the ball forward when it comes to progressive politics. I think it was a really hard day for a lot of us that carried over until Wednesday. And then that day, on Wednesday, also we started to see the turn in terms of more attention being paid to the coronavirus, right? In part because of Trump's disastrous speech, and then the explosion of more cases around the country. So the second part of the week has been dominated by, you know, especially here in Pennsylvania, kind of really significant closures. I mean, I shouldn't say just Pennsylvania. We also, same things happen in Maryland. Same things, you know, happen in New York. Same things happen in, obviously, Washington State, where it's really bad. And some of that conversation has shifted, I mean, really the whole landscape in terms of where people and how people are paying attention to some of the issues involved here. So that's just kind of setting the stage for this kind of whirlwind week. And I think one of the reasons why I feel a little bit kind of exhausted from it, right? Because it's been emotional, both at the level of like the political hopes and behind the Sanders campaign, but also the terms of like the anxiety building around the coronavirus and the real kind of material impacts that this pandemic is having on our daily lives. So that's kind of where I sit, Sean.
I'm not really like fully steeped in the existential dread at this point. I've got some other things to help deal with that. No, I mean, I stocked up yesterday, beer, booze, and bud. So
there you go.
No, but I think that I don't like, I'm fully prepared for this, right? Like, you know, I think what's going to happen is, you know, worried about my family. You know, they live down Montgomery County. My parents both work at LaSalle University, faculty members there. We do have things legitimately to be concerned about, like the lack of testing is one of them. We're only testing 5 people for every 100,000. While other countries are testing 4,000 or 5,000 for every 100,000 or every 1,000,000 people. We don't know where this is at. Right. And I think we're at the point where we have to rely on, you know, a couple of things are important. One, elections matter, you know, not just with Trump, but like with the state and local elections. Like,
right.
Could you imagine how this would be handled if Scott Wagner
exactly
was governor of Pennsylvania?
Exactly.
I think Governor Wolf's response to this has been really good. I think it's been measured a bit. I think we're going to see mass shutdowns of the whole entire state, pretty much. All the schools, that's what's just going to happen. And we're going to have to really, like, dig in and see a mobilization in this country that probably hasn't been seen since the polio outbreaks or since World War II. And I think we have a chance right now to fundamentally reshape the society that we want to have, you know, like through this. And, you know, and like, I think like that's how I'm looking at it down the road, like big picture, you know, this is about solidarity right now and stuff like that. It's about pulling together for your community. And I really think this is an opportunity for the left to message that home instead of like, you know, also focusing on electoral politics, but like, this is what, you know, like we've done this before in the past, but like use that as a way to build a more collectivist society.
Yeah. And I think that's very well said, Sean. I mean, I think we're at a point where,
I mean, we're at a crossroads and like,
this we really
is,
are
like, this is, I think this is bigger than going to war in Iraq. This is bigger than 9/11. We're at a crossroads and like, you know, we can like get bogged down in this existential dread that's going to be going on, or we can forcefully message and push for the things that need to be pushed for, but also like paid sick leave, unemployment insurance, stronger safety nets. But I mean, like we can also craft the message that we need a more collectivist society and start talking about solidarity a lot more and stuff like that.
No, I
because
think
it's
right.
Really going to like, we're really going to be the ones that are going to have to like help ourselves because we can't rely on Trump to do this.
No, and I think for me, it's less what kind of existential dread than thinking about it just at a very kind of affective, kind of emotional level. It feels like the stakes of this election and the way forward are resonating in a different way than they were before.
I mean, like, I think Wednesday night or Tuesday night, I think Biden has the clear shot at this, but mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see over the next couple of weeks with the primaries coming up. But I mean, I feel like this completely changes the presidential election, completely changes the primary. I don't know if Bernie Sanders stays in over the next few weeks or past Pennsylvania once, you know, Biden's projected to go over the top. But I don't think we should take this all or nothing approach and have Sanders take this to the convention. But I think we have an opportunity to really influence the primary or the policy that gets pushed. I mean, like we don't have a safety net in place.
Well, this is what I mean.
And it's now like, it's like whoever's president, the candidate, either Sanders or Biden, I think we have to hold their feet to the fire for this. And it's like,
well, I think I agree 100%. I said, but I think a lot of folks, I mean, it's kind of think about how to put this because I don't want to just kind of say turn so quickly into like just like campaign mode because that's not my intention here.
Yeah.
But it's more like this. It's like, I think there was a lot of folks, if you look at who came out to vote for Biden, for example, right? A lot of those like suburban voters that kind of really, a lot of them who stayed at home, older voters who stayed at home during 2016. At least this is what the exit polls and stuff are showing. Folks that thought that Hillary Clinton had it in the bag because that's what all the polls were showing. They didn't feel this kind of like personal urgency, right? Which they feel now apparently, right? Just in terms of getting rid of Trump.
And these are going to be the people that are going to be most affected by this pandemic.
Well, but this is exactly what I'm saying is like, my point is this. My point is that I think for a lot of those folks who look at the Bernie Sanders campaign, they saw a lot of kind of political arguments and ideological arguments, right? And they saw that these were kind of campaign slogans or political slogans, things like Medicare for all, college, you know, tuition-free college, the Green New Deal. And I think they related to them in that way, in this kind of like this rational kind of political superstructure kind of way. And I think that now they resonate differently. Because exactly what you just said, the fact is that the coronavirus, right, is taking root, like here in Pennsylvania, in Montgomery County, right? Montgomery County, you know, it's not exactly a poor county.
It's right? One of the richest counties in the country.
Exactly, right? And these are, and one that has recently kind of like moved into the blue lane, right?
Swung hard into the blue lane.
Exactly.
Like, yes. Like, right? It's not just, yeah.
And so, I think that a lot of folks, like, so for example, my daughter's soccer game is canceled tomorrow, right? I mean, it's that level of impact. And now there's paying more attention, and the attention that they're paying for, even if you listen to NPR now, what's clear is that our medical system, our medical structure, the way that we have chosen to do things as a society is not working. Like the clip that I played as part of the intro today was from Anthony Fauci, right? And you know, he's the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. He's the one who's been basically speaking truth about this stuff. And it's frightening. He's basically, look, our medical system, we can't do these things. If you look at South Korea, you mentioned, right, 10,000 people have been tested
a day.
Right. As of what's that?
It's 10,000 a day in South Korea.
No. 10,000 total in the U.S.
Yes.
10,000 a day in South Korea. And he was being asked some along those lines. He said, look, we have not set things up that way. We can't do that. Even if we wanted to, because we have all these moving pieces, right? That's the libertarian dream. And this is where it gets us. And so suddenly I think that we have that opportunity. It's kind of a different
spin. It's a reckoning on our institutions.
Well, yeah, and it's a different spin on what you were saying, right? It's basically saying now we're talking about things like medical care, right? And things like this in a much more tangible way. That's connected to people's lives.
A couple of my libertarian friends said instead of bailing out these companies, we have to start mailing checks to every single person within the United States.
Yes.
And this is a libertarian, one of my libertarian friends who wrote for not a friend, but someone I knew in Harrisburg. He writes for Reason Magazine, Eric Bain. Do you remember him? He used to write for the Commonwealth Foundation, the PA Independent, which was run by the Commonwealth Foundation.
Oh, yes. Now I know who you're talking about.
Yep. I think he's very libertarian, but he put up, I made a joke yesterday and he said that. I was like, oh, it's very Keynesian of you. But no, I mean, like, people realize, like, I guess he's along that like line of like Sagar and Jetty, like that bent of like economic nationalist libertarian.
Yep.
Where it's like you're hearing these arguments coming out even from the right saying we have to start mailing checks to people.
Right.
We have to prop up, sustain our economy. Like we have to start thinking about UBI right now.
Yes.
Medicare for all right now. I mean, like, these are issues that like were, I mean, like the fact that like UBI was pie in the sky even a few months ago. This completely brings that back into the conversation.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to have millions of people out of work. They can't go to work. This is not just going to be a next 2-week thing. This is going to be a 3-4-5 month thing where people, like, we're going to be, I mean, like, you know, Sam Cedar was talking about this a couple weeks ago when he heard the person, like that woman from the CDC was like, we're going to have mass disruptions that no one's ever seen before.
Right.
And we're starting to see that right now.
Right. And I think that, you know, here's the linkage, right? This is, if you go to the heart of, say, the Green New Deal, right? This is why, I mean, this is, it could not
I
be.
I mean, and also, like, I think, I was thinking about this earlier. I mean, going along, like, this, we get through this. I feel like this gives us the messaging to say, the Green New Deal is possible. Look what we just came through. Like,
well,
we're able,
not just possible, it's necessary.
Yeah, no, it's necessary.
Let's be clear, because what happens, like, this, as bad as this virus is, right, it is not the worst that it could be.
No.
Right?
But I feel like this is a society, this can be a societal changing mobilization inflection point.
No, exactly. And the point is this, is that everything that we know about climate change, right, everything the science say is that these kind of events are going to be more frequent, right? We're going to see like the, you know, pandemics that are going to be part of a warming planet. And so the question is that what this virus is posing to us in a way, in as I don't want to minimize it, but it's kind of like in a gentle way, right? Instead of giving us like Ebola for all, right, we're getting something that's a pretty serious disease, but something that it's within our framework to be able to deal with, right? And how do we deal with this? And which showing us the holes in this neoliberal framework, the holes in this kind of like market fundamentalism, and the need for bringing all this stuff together. It's the same thing. Like, that's why I brought that stuff up about Google, right? It's like part of what, you know, paid sick days should be just done, right? The fact that there's a connection between people having health insurance, right, and being able to reduce carbon emissions, right? These things are directly connected, and we're seeing it happen right before us right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a way that we have an opportunity, I would even say not just message, right, but also to kind of remake the case in a context where people are paying attention finally. So, I mean, so what that means in terms of like where we go, this is why I said I didn't want to make it like turn it strictly into like about the presidential primary, because that's not the point. It kind of goes to what your point was. We were talking a little about this beforehand too, about this is where the movement needs to go. Right. And not just being so wedded to only say, you know, Bernie, right? Because we could talk about that, the primary specifically kind of in a bit, but this is pretty freaking serious stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, this is like the science fiction stuff we've been joking about.
Yeah.
On the podcast.
Believe me.
For the past 4 years.
Oh, by the way. So, okay. This lets people into a little bit of my psychology. Right. When, you know, when events like this, pandemics, you know, like natural disasters, when things like this happen, some people get really freaked out and they get anxious and all this stuff. My tendency is to like dive in.
Dystopic futures right here.
No, totally. Like I'm looking for books. I want to read more. Like, give me some more dystopic futures. Show me how bad it can be. And so I went and I watched earlier this week, I watched
Contagion. Fury Road.
I watched Contagion. Right, have you seen Contagion?
I have not.
All right. So I went and watched Contagion, heard people talk. First of all, bad movie. It's just not a good movie. It's just like, it's like one of these, it's a perfect example of a movie that takes a theme that we're all familiar with and just kind of like allows these characters to play itself out, but there's no real storytelling there. I mean, that's the overall stuff about Contagion. But it's like, that's kind of like my dive in, right? Like, I want to, you know, what other kind of like pandemic movies are out there? What kind of books are based upon this stuff?
Yeah.
Because it's a different way of seeing, right? It's a different way of grappling with, you know, if we extend this logic out, if we continue on this path in this particular way.
I mean, I, as like an introvert, I'm totally prepared for this. Like,
yeah, somebody wrote on Twitter this week, like, it's time. It's like, it's the time of the inside kids.
Yeah. Like, it's the reckoning of the introverts.
Yeah, exactly.
Introvert Twitter has been funny this week. Yeah. Okay. Oh man, this is going to be great. Daryl Metcalf has spoken about the closing of the state capitol.
Did he test positive?
So Metcalf put this out last night. Today, Liberal Governor Wolf announced that no citizen without Capitol ID badge will be allowed into the state capitol due to the virus. His administration also announced no visitors will be allowed into state prisons. I agree with no visitors in our state prisons decision. It is wrong to block citizens' access to the state capitol. We know liberals embrace Obama's Rahm Emanuel's philosophy. Never want a serious crisis go to waste.
Oh my God!
We are expecting legislation to be advanced next week related to the coronavirus. This is the time when we need more oversight by citizens. This is the time when we need citizens to be able to be in the halls of the Capitol to elect. Is he like calling for a fucking armed revolution over this?
That's where it sounds like it's going.
That's exactly.
But what's ironic, this is one of these things that these kind of right wingers do so well, is they take a principle like Milton Friedman's one, right? I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning of this, right? The whole idea that, you know, you need to build your institutions out so that your ideas are lying around when there's a crisis, so then you can swoop in and kind of fundamentally transform things, because it's only in a crisis that you can do this. And then so that you've got this happening.
I 1000% agree. We should never let a crisis go to waste. Like, this is exactly the time when we should be advocating for these things advancing society, because the other side is going to use this crisis to plunder resources, get rich, and make things even worse than they already are.
No, but that's my whole point. My whole point is like, but he's saying Obama, right? Obama let a crisis go to waste.
Rahm Emanuel, yeah.
Both of them. They let the crisis go to waste. There was a crisis in American culture. Our entire like economy tanked. Collapsed. And then what they went with, like, you know, like, will this be okay, GOP? Will this be okay, GOP? Oh, no, we don't want to do anything too much. I mean, it went with kind of like this like incremental, micro incremental approach to addressing it, as opposed to doing like the FDR move, being like, that's it, guys, we're done, right? You Republicans, you had your shot. You sit down now. We're expanding union rights, right? We're putting in Medicare for all, right? We're going to put us on a path for, I mean, what? None of that. Instead, it was, you know, a crisis went to waste. But anyways, I talk a lot about that in my classes, actually, because we, you know, talk about where are these moments of kind of motivation that that are important to pay attention to, both in terms of being able to kind of make a case, but also to be aware of, because that's when people will start manipulating the most, like in fear and crisis and stability. So anyways, that's so far afield from where
we were. I just had to call someone out on Twitter. They said, like, in response to this, Miskin said the House and Senate will be in session next week, as well the committees while actions will be live streamed via websites. House always not. I said, so Sam, will Republicans cut the live streams like they did in yesterday's transphobic House Health Committee meeting?
Oh man. Well, we shall see. We shall see if they do or if they don't.
So, but yeah, no, I'll get back. It's going to be an interesting few weeks.
It's going to be an interesting few weeks. That's absolutely for sure.
So I actually made it to the supermarket yesterday before, like, I am so glad I made it to the markets Thursday. I called you on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went Wednesday and Thursday, like, stocked up. I made sure I have stuff that I can cook for the next couple of weeks. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad I was able to do that before the fucking panic.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. This is a total random question. Why toilet paper?
Like, I have no clue. Oh, so, okay. One of the things we got to talk about was my trip to Wegmans yesterday. Because Colleen Nguyen, who listens to the podcast, brought this up. So I went to Wegmans yesterday to go get pretty much, I went to make chili. I haven't made it in a couple years. So I got a nice chorizo sausage chili recipe. And so I got all my ingredients for that. And people were fucking, like, just jugs of water. Or, like, I saw a guy with a 24-pack of, like, toilet paper and, like, a 7 or an 8-pack of, like, paper towels. I don't know why people need this shit. Like, you know what I mean? But then, like, when I was standing in line, there was a woman with a fucking face mask on.
God.
Like, the visuals. And then I was standing in front of a lady who had 7 tubs of sour cream in her cart.
Well. You need your sour cream. I mean, how else are you going to make your French onion dip? I mean, I don't know what you're saying.
But, like, I just looked at that. I'm just like,
I wonder what that's about. That's weird.
What, the sour cream?
Or yeah. The sour cream.
I really wanted to get a picture of it, but, like, yeah. I told Roxbury I would love to go to my, love to go to the supermarkets with my camera. And just started taking pictures. Like, dude, he's like, you'll get kicked the fuck out right away. Like, he's like, don't do that. He's just like, go there with your, like, at least if you do that, go there with your iPhone. Don't, like, have your fucking camera on you. Start taking pictures.
Well, it's you know, it's really interesting. I mean, I think It's like, you know, my wife was the same way. She's like, well, you know, we got to make sure we get toilet paper over there. And I'm like, that was the last thing that occurred to me. It's like, if I'm
the first thing that came on my mind is like, I need my beer, I need my weed, and I need my whiskey. I got all three covered yesterday.
All right, I was a little more family oriented on this one. I was a little bit more like, I'm going to get some non-perishables, right? Just so like, it was stuff that, you know, you and I talked about this early on.
Like, we talked about this 3 weeks ago.
Well, exactly. I mean, just like, kind of the idea like, is like, look, you're going shopping, right? You got to go grocery shopping anyways. Just grab some extra of like cans of soup, grab some extra rice, you know, grab some extra, you know, beans, right? You know, make a big pot of chili and put some in the freezer. And because it's the kind of thing that, okay, I don't want to be like nonchalant about it, right? And say like, oh, I don't see what your problem is, and go spitting on things to like prove that, like, you know, this doesn't exist, right? But, you know, but at the same time, it's not like the world is coming to end. There's a rational way forward, right? For to do this. But so again, like, how do you balance that? You know, the real, very real issue that there's going to be things like shortages and that kind of stuff, especially since most of the goods in this country are kind of made like elsewhere. And of course, now Trump has now closed the borders, quote unquote, supposedly, you know, but then he's had to walk that back, and who knows what's actually going on there. But so, I mean, I think that's part of it. And I think people are, you know, having their mind like, well, what do you do? Like, what are you supposed to do? And like, oh my God. And what happened, you know? And again, I guess it's a thing. If I get like the flu and there's like diarrhea involved, okay, I guess you want lots of toilet paper. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's been interesting to see that. Like, even in the stores, it's like going to the stores and
it's funny. I'm grabbing the stuff people aren't grabbing.
Like, yeah, fresh, no, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
Fresh produce, carrots, celery, potatoes, heartier like vegetables that'll last in the fridge for a couple weeks. Like, I'm going for the things that, like, I told my mom this on the phone yesterday, because they went to the store yesterday. My dad's going back to the store. So they got like lunch meat. They bought a couple dozen bagels from the bagel place. I mean, stuff to just stock the freezer with.
Right.
And it's just like, so like, that's what they're doing, right? Just stocking the freezer. And I told my mom, I was like, listen, like, don't go fucking nuts over this. Just like, and don't go like, I need bread and eggs, bread, milk and eggs. Like, it's a blizzard or something. I'm like, no, like, get chicken, get your meats, freeze them, like, and she's like, they're going to be making soups and all. But no, it is, like, absolutely astounding, like, watching everyone. Like, I called my one friend yesterday, and she was like, I need to get toilet paper still. Like, she's like, I'm out of toilet paper, and this is my shopping week.
Well, and if you think about it like that, this is where it's like this balance, right? Because on the one hand, I can't remember who was talking about this yesterday. I mean, maybe it was on the Majority Report, I'm not sure, but we were talking about how it's almost as if people start worrying about buying toilet paper and they hear a story about it. So they worry that other people are going to go out and buy all the toilet paper. So then they run out and buy the toilet paper. Then other people are thinking, oh my God, those people are running out to buy the toilet paper, but I go to the toilet paper. And it's this kind of cascade effect.
I wonder, like, are the state stores considered non-essential? Are they considered essential locations?
I don't know.
I was talking to the whiskey guy. I was talking to the guy at the state store. I was like, dude, he's like, people are coming in and just clearing out the stock. Like, it's like right now.
It's wild. I don't know. It's wild.
But like, I mean, like, their shelves were full, but like, no, people are actually coming. I was like, yeah, I told the guys, like, I better stop here before the run on the state store happens. And he's like, you're like right in the beginning of it. Like, I can imagine like the first thing people think of, like, yesterday, we're going to the fucking liquor store because it's Pennsylvania. Like, I mean, like, but like, I mean, no, it's Pennsylvania. Like, you hear stories all the time, like 4th of July weekend, Labor Day weekend, Memorial Day weekend, this fucking computer systems crash because everyone's buying transactions. All the transactions are happening at once.
Right.
But no, I mean, like, that's what's pretty much is going to be happening. People are going to be stocking up on liquor and.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. So, yeah, so there's that. So anyways, they were just, it was kind of, you know, it's here we are. And I have, you know, my mind goes to like easy dystopian futures, right? So I can go in that direction. But at the same time, I have to say, I mean, for people to say, I'm personally am not panicked at this point. Right. And again, a lot of that has to do with, you know, I mean, I have just a secure job and I have access to health insurance and I know my kids are okay. And
that's the thing with me. I know like I'll still be getting paid. I can work remotely.
Right.
Like, which is great. But like a lot of people don't have that luxury.
No, exactly. And I know that there's, you know, it's interesting to see that, you know, I mentioned this got a little bit earlier, is that, you know, gave that the article in The Guardian about those Google employees and other tech workers and things like this to find out that, well, a lot of those companies have a, you know, a significant number of contract workers, right? That they're employing as, you know, 1099ers, right? They're not actual employees of the company, but for all practical purposes, they are because they're there every single day, but they don't give those contract employees like access to, you know, like their VPN software and things like this, that they can do that telecommuting. So that those folks are forced to actually go into work, right, or put themselves in jeopardy, which is fascinating. So, I mean, you'll see have a link in the show notes that will go to that Guardian article. It's really good to read. But if you think about, you know, that next level, I mean, like, I was having this conversation with whatever, some people in Perksy, and you say, well, yes, I'm just going to get things from I'm just going to get things from Amazon. I'm not going out. And I'm like, well,
Amazon is sold out.
Well, no, but not even that. It's like, how does this stuff get to you from Amazon, right? And there's someone on a podcast, I think it was actually Ben Dixon was talking about this too. Yeah, this economy is built to keep those folks, right, in those like well-to-do, like the suburbs and people like me, right? I'm going to be fine. I can order the stuff on Amazon, things like this. But in order for me to be safe, you've got these huge warehouses, right, packed with employees that are kind of driven to the edge of things, that are not allowed to take sick days, that are not allowed to kind of like, you know, miss work for whatever reason, and have to kind of keep on working in order to stock those trucks that are going to come and deliver that shit to me, right? And so those are the folks that are also most at risk, right? And what do we do with them, right? And this is where you get into that whole idea about disruption, right? Because frankly, you don't want people concentrating in those large warehouses and kind of like,
you don't want people concentrating in the capital.
No, exactly. Right. And so this is, you know, there's no easy way around this it is exposing the huge holes in this economy. Mehdi Hasan was arguing exactly this too, as well. It's like, you know, you shine a light, you'll be able to see the holes that are all over the economy. Yeah. It's pretty glaring.
Yeah. So
anyways, all right, well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and, you know, maybe we can get into some of the specific things kind of happening in PA, talk a little bit about some here and maybe kind of drill down into this a little bit. It's going to be a little, like I said at the top, it's going to be a little bit more free flowing today. Sean and I were talking a little about this yesterday. So yeah, it's just kind of, you know, we're kind of in the midst and the thick of it.
Oh, you can talk about the PA Stands Up conference.
Oh yeah. Definitely. We'll start off. We'll lead with that. That sounds good.
Yep.
All right, good. All right, well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this. Well, actually, we will be right back after this, but I want to make one more appeal, folks. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member for those $5 a month. Help keep this podcast going. Help keep us going as we are kind of like, yeah, in the midst of this pandemic. Here we go. It's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day that United Auto Worker members won an 18.5-cent hourly raise after a 4-month strike against General Motors. After World War II, workers grew increasingly frustrated. The war years were a time of labor peace, as most unions agreed not to go out on strike in order to support the war production efforts. But during the war, as companies raked in profits, many workers felt that they were not receiving a fair share. Worse, wartime shortages saw the price of consumer goods skyrocket. A dollar simply could not stretch as far as it once had. after the war ended, the workers wanted to make up for the ground they felt they had lost during the conflict. A wave of strikes washed over the United States. Walter Reuther led the auto workers out on strike on November 21, 1945. Their demand was a 30% raise. Reuther publicly argued that General Motors could afford to pay the raise without raising the price of their cars. He urged the company to open its books so the public could see their finances. The UAW laid out its reasoning in a report entitled Purchasing Power for Prosperity. The strike wore on for more than 100 days, but the union had done a good job making its case to the public. Finally, General Motors agreed to a raise, as well as improved benefits such as a better recognition of seniority and promotions and protections for the union members. The contract was seen as a huge step forward for organized labor to take a seat at the table with capital. The strike and its settlement solidified Reuther as the leader of the UAW and a powerful voice for workers.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast, the quarantined edition. Yes, we're in the midst of the what seems to be the beginning of the worst of it when it comes to the coronavirus outbreak and the coronavirus pandemic, I should say.
We got to flatten the curve.
We got to flatten the curve. Now we're all learning what that graph is, right? I was telling Sean this.
Thankfully, Philadelphia canceled their St. Pat's.
So I was telling Sean this, right, when I first – it was on Chris Hayes, right, on All In, and he was – you know, these curves that everyone's becoming familiar with. There's the pointed curve when nothing happens, and you want to flatten the curve to keep below kind of medical capacity, blah, 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 blah. And there's these two cities that they always – learn. You're studying epidemiology, I guess how you say it, or any kind of disease prevention. These are you go right back to the Spanish flu, 1917, 1918, and you look at the outbreaks, and you look at two different cities that had different responses to them, right? The one city, basically said, holy crap, we better limit social contact. We better make sure that people are separated, shut down public events, right? And they're the ones who flattened the curve, and that was St. Louis, right? St. Louis, Missouri. And then there's the one that went started with it, nothing was done, boom, spiked straight up, right? Over capacity, a whole bunch of people died, right? Because they were the freaking virus, nah, we're going to have a parade instead. We're going to have a big public event. Bring everybody together. And that's what they did. Right. And that city was Philadelphia. Right. Yeah. That was Philadelphia. Philadelphia is in the textbooks as what not to do. And so, they were set up until this week. They were like, no, we're going to go ahead with the St. Patrick's Day parade. We're going to go ahead and we're going to do it. And they're like, on TV, they're like, this is what Philadelphia did in 1917, 1918, the Spanish flu. Now they want to have the St. Patrick's surprise. And somebody, I don't know who the hell was, finally got the ear of Kenny or whatever. Said dude,
cancel the fucking parade.
Yes, exactly. I understand you're gonna be personally upset, but fuck your personal feelings. It's we got people to take care of here.
And speaking about Philadelphian parades, I decided to go to a convention in Philadelphia last week.
Yeah, exactly. So this was so I mean,
so it's been a week since the Keystone Progress, the new PA Stands Up conference. I have not been feeling sick yet, so knock on wood. I was also at a very large environmental protest on Monday in the Capitol. Knock on wood, I have not feeling sick yet.
That is good.
My allergies are going crazy.
Yeah, mine are too. That got me nervous at one point. That was the one thing that got me nervous. My allergies started spiking. I'm like, oh, crap.
But it's not like I'm getting – I'm starting to get clogged up, but it's more or less my sinuses.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just it's just a sinus infection, because spring has happened 6 weeks early this year. I had a really great time over the weekend. I shot the PA Stands Up conference. I rented a Canon 5D Mark IV. You can see some of the pictures I've been posting on my Instagram page, kitchen.snaps. That's snaps with a Z at the end.
You're getting better at this.
Yeah.
I saw you release a bunch of the photos in your newsletter.
Yeah, I'm actually canceling that. So I came to the point where I was going to cancel it because got booked for the next couple of weeks with my photography stuff is taking off right now. And I was not factoring that in with the newsletter. You know, I was looking at the newsletter for extra money, but I'm making a lot more right now with the photography and taking up a lot of my time with editing and stuff like that.
Good to know.
Which is a good problem.
That's money back in my pocket.
Let's just say I've made enough this year where I was never expecting to make this much doing the photography stuff this year that I've already hit. And I'm already at the point where I pretty much like padded my savings account pretty nicely. I've built up my nest egg to where I am. My bills and all are covered for the next couple months in case anything happens, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like it's taken off. And but last week the conference was awesome. I ran into Canon 5D Mark IV and a 24-72.8 lens, which is a nice like professional lens.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Perfect Image in Lancaster City. That's where I rent the equipment from. I know the photos came out awesome. The conference was pretty cool. It's gonna be interesting to see how this organization works. PA Stands Up is, what were you gonna say?
What do they do at the conference this year?
So Friday night, so it was at the Marriott downtown Philly, which was connected to the convention center. Friday night they had the Auditor General's debate, which was nice. And then Saturday morning, there is an introduction, pretty much Dan passing over the torch to Hannah and Michaela, who are both going to be taking over the organization.
Dan is stepping back?
Yeah. He's still going to be like involved with the organization pretty up front, but mm-hmm. Hannah Lowerson is taking over. I think she was involved with like Turn PA Blue. She got really involved with everything back in 2016, 2017. So she's going to be taking over. Michaela, I don't know her last name. She moved back to Pennsylvania from Illinois. They both gave amazing speeches. Representative Fiedler spoke in the morning. Sarah Namorado spoke in the morning. There was a candidates forum where every state and Senate candidate who showed up was able to speak for a minute, which was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we broke out in the sessions for the rest of the day. And then at lunchtime, a Biden surrogate spoke, a Warren surrogate spoke. It was Brian Sims.
Mm-hmm.
Warren dropped out at this point, but you know, Sims still delivered a really great speech. And then Zephyr Teachout spoke, which was pretty cool.
Very cool. So if you put this in comparison with like the Keystone Progress Summit, like of days past versus Keystone Progress Summit for the past couple years, how would you characterize that kind of trajectory about where this organization seems to be going?
I think the summits themselves have complete 180.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the demographics have switched from a very like an older demographics, like where it used to be, you know, like a bunch of older people getting around, palling around for the weekend, almost like a reunion type of thing,
mm-hmm.
to where this is more geared towards your activists, your organizers, your trained, like these younger operatives within the Democratic, within the progressive movement. And it's a lot of training sessions. There are people like a couple of our friends from Sunrise Movement in Pennsylvania had a mm-hmm. thing on bird dogging, and it was funny while I was in there. They played the Scott Wagner Young and Naive video. I was like, yes. Everyone looked at me like, what the what?
That was mine.
I was like, that's exactly what I did. I was like, I'll take, yep, I made this popular. Just like, everyone looked at me. I think like Troy Turner was in
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah, I know Troy.
Yeah, so that was awesome. There was a bunch of other small sessions, very intimate. No, it was really good. I mean, like instead of having it like in a large space like the Hilton downtown Harrisburg, there was only like three or four like breakout rooms they had. So it was very small,
mm-hmm.
but like it was a lot more training styles. Hmm. So, and I think they're going to move it around the state each year. So,
yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I think we shouldn't have to force people to go to Philadelphia every year. It's good to have it in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Lehigh Valley, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd be I think Lehigh Valley needs to be one of the key areas. You keep on hearing me say that, that's for sure. But very cool, very cool. No, I'm glad it won't, and I'm glad it didn't turn into like the CPAC of Pennsylvania, where it became the ground zero for the spread of the coronavirus. So I'm very, very happy about that.
Oh man, you want to talk about that over the weekend? So we were supposed to have our Bernie campaign office launch this week. Not happening. But even like Wednesday night after the Trump speech, I got in our group chat. I was like, hey, we should probably cancel this tomorrow. And they were still, no, they were like, no, we're going forward with it until like the next morning. Cause it like, once I sent that message out, everyone else had agreed, like besides the main organizer, which I don't want to, but like, this is like, and then the next day, the state pretty much like the state organizer shut everything down across the state with all the campaign office openings.
Yeah.
I mean,
people are getting it. I understand it too. I mean, I understand you put a lot of energy into kind of organizing something, getting ready to all the line, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, I'll tell you, here's my reference point for that though. When we were, when I lived in DC, this is right after the WTO protests, right? In Seattle, the battle for Seattle. I was living in D.C., and then the following spring was A16, which we had the kind of protest against the IMF and the World Bank. And then the following year, we were set to have the largest protest against the IMF and World Bank that had been seen. It was looking like it was – I mean, the movement was building. And we were, what, about 2 weeks out? No, a little bit more, maybe a month out from this. And literally, we've been planning for a year, been all these meetings. We had our kind of our affinity groups all together. And then 9/11.
Yeah.
And then 9/11 came. And it was, and I remember then is kind of like being like this, the feeling of like complete, like what the just happened.
Were
like,
you in DC when 9/11 happened?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was freaking crazy. I mean,
like that day in particular was just nuts.
Well, yeah. And right after, I mean, I was teaching at George Mason University then. So I guess it was 2 years in. And so I had to drive, I would drive past the Pentagon every day. Right. And I woke up that morning. I was not teaching that morning. I don't think. No, I was not teaching. So I got in there. I'll never forget it. It was at my desk in kind of the back room of my apartment. And I was listening to NPR as I was kind of working on my dissertation and stuff. And then I hear that about these attacks in world. What the hell? So I went out in the other room. I turned on the TV, and that's what kind of when I saw it. And even before I got out to turn out the TV, right, there were like jet planes flying over. Like, and I lived in like the Tenley Towns up by American University, so not right down, right downtown. There were helicopters that was going on. There were armored. You know, I walked up to the like two blocks up to Wisconsin Avenue, and there was literally armored personnel carriers going up and down the street. I don't think it was the next day, but 2 days later, I was back in school. Went back to George Mason University, and of course you could see the freaking devastation of the Pentagon. You had to be routed way around it. When I got to George Mason University, I went to my building, and someone had chalked the area in front of the building, right, that basically said, I'm not going to repeat it, but horrible things about Muslims, right, mm-hmm. out there. And that's in Fairfax County, which is one of the most diverse counties in the entire country. And so I had several Muslim students, right? When we returned to classes the final week, they had the next week, there were students in my class that were like thrown from buses, right, because they were Muslim and things like that. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So, my point being is like in the midst of all that, even as devastating as that was, I mean, all that kind of movement towards that kind of the building of that global justice movement. Having to kind of come to terms with, no, look, there's no way we can just go forward with this, right?
Just from like a safety standpoint, or
not even that. I mean, just from the world just freaking changed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you can't operate on the basis of a narrative and a movement, right, that was based in one reality when that reality has now shifted, right? I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, we ended up – I mean, there were the hard, some of the hardcore folks, right, that just decided they – oh, we got to keep moving forward. I'm like, how the hell do you move forward? Anyways, that's a long tangent, but that was crazy. I'll never forget that. But, yeah, so there we are. Well, I'm glad that was cool. I'm glad that I hope that is going to be one of the, you know – I don't know what you call it, like the discs in the progressive spine across this country, to help build out these movements, because I think that's really kind of where we need to go.
Yeah, I know. I like what PA Stands Up is doing. They are pretty much bringing together Reclaim Philly, all the Indivisible chapters in the eastern part of the state, Cumberland Valley Rising, and really operating under one roof, which is great. Like, it's a great idea to like bring all this stuff together. And we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. I'm hopeful, man. I'm hopeful. So we got, I don't even know where to go from here, right? Because, I mean, on the one hand, we already talked a little about some of the Montgomery County stuff, right? And you talked about your kind of folks down there and stuff. And that was the big, hit yesterday was, you know, Montgomery County, basically the governor coming out and basically saying, nope, we're shutting everything down.
I think Wolf's response has been good to this. Mm-hmm. I think it's what we need. Yeah. Republicans are going to be in session next week. So, I mean, I think they're going to address coronavirus legislation. Hopefully, like, Summer Lee put the demands out there last night. Did you see what she wrote or no?
I saw the last thing I saw that she wrote was basically, you know, unless we're going to deal with these things, there's no reason why.
She's pretty much like, we shouldn't be going into the Capitol unless we're dealing with paid sick leave, health care for every Pennsylvanian, moratoriums and evictions, and utility shutoffs, and then humane plan for state prisons. So this is the baseline of what we should be going into in Harrisburg. I know. I feel like she's good at this. Like, you know what I mean?
She's fantastic. I mean, she's freaking amazing.
Yeah. So.
So there you have it. So they've been good. Here we go in PA. I know they're shutting everything down. A couple things that are going to be interesting to pay attention to. I mentioned this again earlier on about this piece from an Inside Higher Ed. It kind of resonated with me too, because I've been thinking a lot about it. Mark Hoylesman, I think is how you say his last name, but basically talking about what the impact of the public universities, they may not be able to handle the impact of the coronavirus. So I'll give you, you know, last week, Westchester University kind of like was the kind of the point on this, in terms of the state system of higher education where I work. Westchester University decided that, okay, well, we're shutting it down. We're shutting everything down. Everything is going to be moved onto online instruction for the remainder of the semester. Right? There's no way, and that's the way that they're going to handle it. And then slowly but surely, there's been the kind of like Penn State and, you know, you said Lafayette and Millersville.
I absolutely think that like they're just using that to like just say it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to move me online. I don't know if the infrastructure is in place for that to happen at this point.
It's not. I'll tell you it's not. This is what I'm saying. This is exactly, yes.
And like, we have to start realizing at the university, like, we're taking a year out of everyone's life at this point.
Right.
Like, we're going to talk about refunds of tuition and stuff like that. And, you know, are these college students expecting to pay for a semester of room and board that they're not going to be there and stuff like that? Like, how are these students going to be getting refunded if they're not going to be on campus for the rest of the semester?
Right. Yep. This is exactly the point that was kind of is made in this article. So you think about the kind of funding crisis that, say, public education, public higher education especially, has faced, but not just this. I mean, this is just one little window into the same kind of dynamic that we've seen happen across our country the past 40 years. You know, Sean and I, if anything, one of the drumbeats of this podcast of Raging Chicken Press has been shining a light exactly on this kind of like the decimation of the public brought about by folks like the Koch brothers, like all these kind of right-wing, kind of libertarian, ultra-right, kind of anti-government, anti-public, market fundamentalist folks. They've been slowly, systematically defunding the public, right? Defunding those things that we held in common. And, you know, I'm in one of those institutions where I see this happening. And one of the things that concerns me and why I wanted to bring this up and put this on people's radar, because every question that you just pointed to, Sean, is absolutely is going to be at the forefront of everyone's mind who's involved with these with public higher education. Absolutely. What are you going to do with funding? What are you going to do with all this kind of stuff, right? At the same time, is that I just use Katrina as the example, right? Naomi Klein writes about this a lot, drawing attention to Milton Friedman and Milton Friedman's whole approach to crisis, right? He realized this basically his group way back in the 1970s, 1980s, when they first started realizing that they had these ideas about kind of dismantling the dismantling public programs and all this kind of stuff, but those ideas were not popular. Right. So despite this, everyone thought they were crazy. They were marginal. They were kind of like fringe and other, they just dismissed them. The only time that those ideas that would be receptive was been when there was a crisis. So they tried out their ideas in places like Chile. Right. After the United States helped back the coup of Salvador Allende. Right. Milton Friedman's people were on the ground to promote all these kind of free market reforms. Right. To bring in the free market, decimate the state and so on. And they began kind of trotting around the world doing this stuff, looking for crises. They also realize that you actually create crises, right? When you start defunding public institutions over time, right, people start not liking them as much, right, and then they become easier to dismantle, right? So there's those two things. In Katrina, what happened was Louisiana was one of the targets for turning the public school system over to vouchers, right? Private voucher systems. And again, people in New Orleans especially, and kind of lots of places in Louisiana, wanted nothing to do with this. The governor, Bobby Jindal, he wanted to turn to voucher. No. They fought back. Katrina came, wiped out everything, right? There was no way that you could get the schools up and running again. And literally, like, the week after Katrina hit, Milton Friedman, one of his last pieces of writing before he eventually died, right, writes this long op-ed, right, in the New Orleans paper about the need to move to all voucher, privatize the public school system. And in one fell swoop, they turned it from a public system into a completely voucherized system, right? That's the way that these people think and that they operate. And now, so be on alert for these vultures that will be looking as this as an opportunity to say, oh my God, how are you going to deliver online instruction to all these students? The infrastructure is not there. Oh, look at this guy with a briefcase. He has a solution. We can provide this infrastructure for you for a cut of the tuition dollars, right? And I bring that up in part because we found out last week that one of the proposals that is kind of been kicking around out there in Harrisburg, right, from the chancellor's office, is to bring in this outside curriculum delivery service in which they would set up all this stuff. And I could get into this in more detail once we know more about it. They will set up all this, all the infrastructure and all that they require. They will go out and recruit students to get onto this online program for a cut of the tuition dollars. Right? Now, that was just an idea batting around. But I guarantee you that we're going to start seeing more of this that's going around. So as we are fighting to do the thing that Sean said earlier, enact this whole idea about solidarity, about building out our communal infrastructure and so on, there's going to be those people that are going to look to profit off this and actually to further decimate the public sphere. So
I have a bit of breaking news.
Oh, awesome.
Donald Trump has been exposed to another person that just got...
Oh, my God.
Tested positive for coronavirus.
Who was it this time?
The mayor of Miami, who was also at Mar-a-Lago over the weekend.
Mar-a-Lago is like a freaking cesspool at this point. I mean, seriously, you had the guy, Bolsonaro. You got Bolsonaro's communication guy who was handing him the kind of like make Brazil great again hats. Now you got this dude.
There's absolutely no way Trump does not have fucking coronavirus at this point. He must be freaking the fuck out. Trump is like a huge germaphobe too, so this may actually I'm telling you, there might be a possibility if we see our first female president within the next 4 or 5 weeks.
You mean Nancy Pelosi?
Yes. Could you imagine like that dystopic, like the point we get there, like the president and vice president both get taken out from coronavirus? Dude, like keep
Because Pence was there, right? He was there for the entire time in Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, no, and Pence was pictured with everyone.
Yeah, they got that picture with Bolsonaro and that other freaking dude, like, I don't know who the other guy was.
His comms director, yeah.
No, there was a comms director. There was still another one, too. There was another guy, too, as well. It was, like, photobombing one of the things, like, holding the ads.
There's this video. I think we should probably put it into the show notes.
Okay.
The one from Iran, and, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, you watched it earlier. I watched it last night. It's a five-minute video from the New York Times. And pretty much, like, spelled out how, like, the Iranian government had no, like, lack of vision to to prepare for the pandemic. They thought it was a joke. They laughed it off. Like, they're downplaying it. It's not that big of a deal, blah, blah, blah. And then all the Iranian officials start getting sick.
In the town of Rash.
And start dying. Some of them start dying. Now, like, everyone in Iran's top government was exposed to this. I mean, we're seeing the same thing here. I mean, that segment last night on Rachel Maddow, the opening segment, and she talks about, like, how all the world leaders who have been exposed to this are all the fucking right-wing whack jobs.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau has been exposed to it.
Yeah, his wife tested positive, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, no. And that's the thing we have to remember. Like, this is going to be fine for 80% of the people.
But come on, Justin Trudeau is too good-looking to be a right-wing nut job.
No, but I mean, like, it's Charles Barkley fucking tested positive.
Oh, I missed that, really?
Yeah. He tested positive. No, you have to... Yeah.
That matters, I'm telling you, because, like, Americans love their celebrities, so they'll pay attention now.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, so...
How about that? So, yeah, Trump... This is... I guess we're gonna get a real-time study in, like, what this disease does to people, because...
I think next week we're going to be in a radically different world.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. I mean, that's the way it feels. It feels like don't know exactly people, how this, like, is going
to
go.
I tried to tell my parents about exponential growth. Like, this is like... my mom's like, what do you mean? I'm like, one day there's one, then there's two, then there's six, 12, 40, 100, 250, like 1,000, 2,000 people. Like, mushroom clouds. Like, right. This is like... Just so you know, like, this is what we're getting at.
No, exactly. Exactly.
I know. I like, yeah. So.
Gotta love it, man. Gotta love it.
Yeah. So.
I'm just looking to see if where we're at this point in terms of Pennsylvania. I'll see if they posted new numbers.
We're up to like 26 or something like that.
Okay. Because it was 22 yesterday evening.
I know Montgomery County is an epicenter, like, right now. Yep. Like,
literally, like, 10 minutes from my house. Literally, like, where Sean, like, lives.
Yeah. Like, where my parents live. Like, right, exactly. Apparently, like, my dad got up at, like, 6 o'clock this morning and went to the store, like, right away before, like, the morning rush.
Yeah.
So they went to Costco. They're Costco members. Or BJ's. One of the two, but...
Yeah. Crazy, man. Crazy. So, yeah. So we'll see where we're at. I like the way you said next week we're going to be a whole new world. It does feel like we're in a very different space right now. And
we are 2 weeks out from where Italy was for the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that is how serious this is going to get.
And it's a real question about what this impact is going to be, you know? So we shall see. So listen, before we go to this week's last call, I just want to get your just a little take on the presidential campaign at this point. I mean, coronavirus obviously is dominating everything and is reshaping the way that we're thinking about kind of our daily lives and right across the board. There's been a... after that last Tuesday, right, that kind of, you know, pretty significant defeat for Bernie Sanders' campaign, and a remarkable, I think, it does say a lot for the power of cable news to actually shape public opinion, which is pretty freaking wild. I heard it actually, this is the one thing I wanted to mention. I heard this one discussion, and somebody was saying that one of the things that happened in the Sanders campaign that was a mistake, right, was it was, and they were talking about social media and they were talking about online stuff like this. They were saying specifically was they went all in on Twitter and would not engage on Facebook. Right. And why does that matter? And this is fun. It's funny because this is something I teach writing for social media. And one of the things I always tell my students, right, is because, look, we all know that, you know, Facebook is where, like, grandma and grandpa are, right? Facebook is, like, where everybody is, right? More people are on Facebook than any other place. It is the kind of the broad swath of the public. It is not cool any longer to be on Facebook, right? And the hip places to be, right, in terms of political campaign is Twitter, right? And a lot of the campaign invested seriously on Twitter and really kind of poo-pooed. This is some from inside reporting, poo-pooed any kind of like Facebook stuff. That's not to say that Bernie was not active on Facebook, because he was. Facebook Live videos and all this other kinds of stuff. But it was more of a particular kind of mentality, right? And there was, after the Super Tuesday, there was some commentary about this too as well, the saying like, look, there's got to be a reaching out beyond the kind of just the next generation. We have to make this case beyond, like beyond, if we're going to win the election. And there's just kind of an interesting perspective there about one of the aspects of the campaign that got maybe a little too pigeonholed. And it also had a lot to do with this whole, you know, I think it was Naomi Key Kantz was basically saying this. It's like, look, you know, frankly, you're only going to get so far in organizing woke Twitter, right? About, you want to say, who could be more woke, and using the language of the emerging social movement, using the languages of this, is only going to take you so far if you're trying to organize fundamental change. It has to go beyond that. So it was just kind of an interesting thing. It was something that you
I saw nothing about that on Facebook. I mean, I haven't looked that deep into it.
No, it was just fascinating. It was fascinating, yeah, in terms of like talking about internal the campaign, in terms of how the campaign was talking about kind of its outreach and stuff. So that was just kind of interesting. But you know, more to the point, kind of going forward, what has to happen now, Sean?
I mean, I think Sanders sticks in for a couple more weeks probably at this point, and see how the primaries go. Like if they switched and trend his way, I don't see that, but. I mean, I don't think we should talk about like just taking this to the convention. Mm-hmm. I think that's just not a strategically viable option. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, a bunch of people were right. We have to start. I think we have to realize the fact that Biden is on track to get the delegates by the time Pennsylvania happens. Like that's where he's at right now. That's what's probably going to happen most likely. I think maybe Sanders sticks around to that point, but I think it's also the point where, you know, we have to start leveraging power. Democrats have to realize they can't win without Sanders supporters. You know, like they can't win without his base, and they have to extend an olive branch and start making a serious like play at their platform. I mean, you know, I think we've seen the thing is, it's like we don't pack up and leave. Like the Sanders campaign, people who did work on Sanders didn't just shut down and leave in 2016, right? They formed organizations like Reclaim and other groups like that across the country, and they organized. You know, it's the reason why AOC is elected. It's the reason why Larry Krasner is DA, why Kendra Brooks is in city council in Philadelphia, why Philadelphia has expanded their protections of workers over the past couple of years, because groups like Reclaim have been primarying people and have been organizing. And I think like we have to continue to organize with that. I think there's ways we have to go back to the drawing board and think about it. And I mean, do we also think like, is there a point about the toxicity of like the left, like DSA Twitter, just like, you know, not just attacking people, but like, I mean, is what value do we have as a movement where, I hate to say the Bernie Bros, but like that section of the DSA Twitter, where it's just like, how do we control that like emotion? Like, you know what I mean? Well, and channel that somewhere else. I feel like the fact Bernie Bros were a story, you know, which is completely disparages the movement. I think it is extremely detrimental to the movement. Yes, there are factions within Sanders' movement that is misogynistic and that, you know, shouldn't be really be lumped in with Sanders supporters. They should be, you know, like, I mean, like, I don't see strategy with the Chapo people. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, where they idolize Sanders and that wing of the party. Like, where, you know, and I feel like that's a problem, where they don't have strategy. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just double down, drill down, and we're going to keep fighting to the very last day. Well, where it's like, you know, where it's cut your losses, fight for tomorrow, you know, go back to the drawing board and reorganize your priorities.
Well, like, this is why I think that, you know, this is what my point was, I think I was trying to get at with that thing about Facebook, right? Is that part of what happens, what any movement needs to do, right, is move beyond its initial, say, click, right? And again, I think this was Ben Dixon talking about this, was like, you know, if you think about it, the first kind of convention, the Seneca Falls Convention in to get women the right to vote, right, was in 1848. 1848, right? Women got the right to vote in this country, right, in 1920. That's when it was ratified. It was passed in Congress in 1919, right? That's a long time, right? And you don't get there by having a closed group basically saying that, hey, this is our language. This is the way that we are going to talk about this stuff. And then if you want to join our movement, you have to do this too as well. Right. There has to be that reaching out. Right. And the expanding into, I hate to say it, into normie land. Right. To use that kind of language. And we're actually, I think that's also in part the solution, right? I mean, the solution is once you're actually confronted with more and more.
But I think our ideas are already out there. And no. Taking over that. I mean, I think we saw it with the exit polling. You saw every single state in this primary
exactly my, has supported, exactly where I was going with this. Yep.
Like, has supported the Green New Deal. Exit polling shows that the Medicare for All is as popular as it's ever been within the base, within the voter of the Democratic, within the base of the Democratic Party. I mean, let's just deal with it. Like, that's who's coming out and voting, whether they're voting for Biden or they're voting for Sanders. That's the base of the party in this primary process. And the base agrees with having Medicare for All.
Exactly. And not just that. And issue after issue, right?
Yes.
I mean even like, in the Deep South, that's what that was the belief.
Yeah.
So that was exactly where I was going with this. Like, look, if you look at where's the hope, there's the hope. The hope is that we've won the policy argument. And this is where I thought Bernie's strategy.
And Sanders was right on with the press conference.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was about to say, where he was exactly on point. Because basically what he did, he said, we won the policy argument, right? I recognize that this electability thing, that's we're losing that. But we won the policy argument. And I think I'm a total fan about him moving forward to this debate on Sunday night and then to Tuesday's primary. After that, we'll see where it goes.
And I'm okay if his campaign's over Wednesday. I mean, there's a possibility that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, if it's visibly possible, the campaign is over at that point, he should concede, negotiate his way out, and get these policy ideas that we won into the National Party platform instead of taking that to the convention with the last time.
Well, and I think he set it up in such a way that there's the possibility. I'm not going to say this is absolutely going to happen because we'll see what happens with the moderators and all this kind of stuff. That he basically said, look.
And we deserve a one-on-one debate to see Biden if he's absolutely competent to do this.
That debate is so important for two things. One, number one, say, look, you're going to go up against Trump. Like, can you get through a sit-down debate now? Right? Because you freaking changed the rules so you can sit down. You know, Biden doesn't have to stand. So, number one, is he going to be able to just handle it, right? Because that's a serious question. That's the elephant in the room nobody wants to talk about, right? That's number one. But the more important one, I think, for the progressive movement is that Bernie Sanders laid it out, basically said, here's the policy issues. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to be asking you on Sunday. I'm going to be putting these questions, where are you on Medicare for All? Because remember, Biden basically told in an interview, say that he would, if as a hypothetical, If Medicare for All passed the House, Medicare for All passed the Senate, and he's president, does he veto it? And he's like, yeah, basically he'll veto it. So, I mean, really, the question is, are you going to veto Medicare for All? Where are you on tuition-free college? Where are you on the Green New Deal? Right? And he's basically, Bernie said, like, look, here's all the questions of the test. This is what we're going to talk about. And to basically make that, because this is going to be probably one of the more watched debates, right, discussions, to have Bernie's kind of front-loading that with the policy issues and the questions that he's going to drive, I think is exactly what needs to happen. And then it's up for, I think, for the movement to basically say to Biden, look, it does not going to matter who the hell is president. We're not going away. Right. And we are going to be, the question is, do we have someone who's in the White House who's going to be a champion for these issues that we can move forward? Or is there going to be somebody that we're going to have to push and fight with in order to get it for? Doesn't matter. Either way, we're doing it. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the debate. I'm looking forward to where this goes from here. And I hope that we're all going to basically going to be able to go like cheer outside about this at some point soon. So we shall see.
I have a news article.
A news article. News. Okay.
Montgomery County liquor stores will not close amid the coronavirus outbreak.
Well, because you need it for disinfecting stuff.
Yes, make your own rubbing alcohol.
Jesus Christ. There you go. All right, cool. All right, well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right in a couple minutes with a very quick Let's Go. Talk to you in a bit. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody. This is Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Let's go! We talk space news. We talk beer news. We talk about whatever else is going on. Like I said, we'll make it a pretty quick one today. So I just want to give you the updates on Free Will. Free Will is releasing one of my all-time favorites tomorrow on Saturday. It's called Safe Word. It's an Imperial IPA with mangoes and habaneros, hopped with Citra, Simcoe, and Chinook. Notes of sweet, juicy mango up front, which submits to a dominant heat with a healthy dose of habanero peppers. That comes in at 10.2 ABV. I have a long history with this one. I had never had anything. The first time I tasted this was the first batch that they did when Free Will, when the brewery was still and the tasting room was still basically in the basement of where they're located now. And the tasting room was just basically like an old storage room where there's actually like a working freezer and stuff like in it in this dank little area. And they had this on tap. Like you did it. They were just starting. Well, I think it was even before they started canning. And they came out with Safe Word. I remember having that and be like, oh, man, this is great. And I actually got an entire growler of it. Drank the thing. So definitely one of my favorites. And last week, this is one reason I'm bummed that we missed last week. One of my other favorites from them is called Orange Colored Malcontent. You can see where it gets its name, right? But it is a WIPA brewed with flaked oats, 120 pounds of fresh hand-squeezed Cara Cara oranges. and milk sugar, and it's hopped with Idaho 7 Yukonot. How do you say that?
I guess that's it.
Yukonot. Yukonot, okay. And Apollo, and that comes in at 9.5 ABV. I love this beer. I absolutely love it. I like last year's can design better, right? Because it's basically Trump screaming into the world, right? Forget the can design. It's still an awesome beer. They also had Sun Servants, which is a brand new beer. It's a Helles lager brewed with a base of Pilsner and a variety of specialty malts hopped with laurel and then cold conditions for weeks. Notes of floral honeysuckle, white grape, lemon, fresh bread, and hay. Comes in a nice kind of even sessionable 5.1 ABV. That was really good. I liked that. It actually kind of got me into a summer mood, which I was very happy about. Last one, too, from last week, The Truth About Birds. And those, so I'll give you the read from them. So a few weeks back, they brewed part two of a collaboration with the folks at Hop Farm Brewing Company. And this time, they brought it over here. So it was a Belgian-inspired white IPA. And it was brewed with Japanese knotweed, honey, and hopped with Motoika, Gerilo, and Rocco. I don't know. they got a few cases and kegs, which they brought over in Percocet, so I was able to grab some of that too as well. Also pretty awesome. And that's about it. So the other thing I want to do, I'm going to give a shout out for the folks at Saucony Creek, Creek Brewing. From what I understand, they're kind of on board with maybe even doing some interviews and that kind of stuff. One of my students was actually working for them, working maybe doing some social media stuff, so I'm pretty psyched. But as I was right before spring break, I went over and got there. I got Unicorn Hazed and Confused, which I've had before, that's a great, solid New England IPA. Fantastic. This one was great. It's called So Hot Right Now. I think it's still on tap. They still had some cans left there, too, as well. It's a nitro coffee stout. It's cold steep coffee, which is a blend of Ugandan and Colombian dark roast from Four Monkeys Coffee Roastery located in Kutztown, and that comes in at 7.2 ABV. Pretty good. Another one called Tears of the Squonk. Right, I actually had this last night. It's great. It's an American style barley wine. It actually sneaks up on you too as well because it tastes more like just kind of like a nice lager or something. And they say it has a slight booziness, but it kind of goes. You really don't get it, but man, it'll hit you. It comes in at 9.6 ABV. And then finally, one called Topaz Rain, a hazy IPA brewed with raw wheat, Pils malt, and copious hoppings of Galaxy, Motoika, there's a thing, and a pinch of Citra at 7.5 ABV. Lots of more cool stuff. The other thing that I did not get a chance to get because they were releasing it on last Saturday, and now with all the coronavirus stuff, I haven't gotten it yet, but they have this one out there. If you're out in the Kutztown area, it's called Salted Caramel Chocolate Porter. It looks freaking amazing. And here's how they described it. They collaborated with the friends at Batch Micro Creamery, located in downtown Allentown Market, to create a splendid dessert porter. The recipe incorporates some of those same ingredients Batch uses in making their delicious handmade ice cream. Smooth and creamy, sweet and salty chocolate porter is the end result. I'm just hoping they have some of these available when I go back to grab it. So
they should pay you to like promote this stuff.
Dude, well, you know what? You got to do something. I think I might do some of the brewery interviews as a patron only stuff release initially, but we'll see. That might be one of those things. So.
I went to Pizza Boy yesterday. So Pizza Boy released a peanut butter sunny side up version, which is really nice. Not in cans, on draft only. So I did that and got a really nice New England hazy IPA, indistinguishably or something like that. And then a mosaic hopped West Coast IPA. That's awesome. Both these beers were canned like 3 days ago, so they're super fresh. I almost drank a six pack last night.
Well, you have to have something to wash down and kind of deal with that dry throat you got going on. Oh, man. Well, that's all I got for this week, everybody. Sean, anything else for the good of the order?
No, that's everything. I just have a bunch of laundry to do.
Yeah. So I just want to, everybody out there, I want to make sure that everybody knows that Sean is going to be pushing a new phrase going forward, right? That is a very optimistic, forward-looking phrase for our kind of pandemic world. Like, all we got to say is, like, coronavirus and chill, everybody. Coronavirus and chill. I wish that for all of you out there this weekend and kind of moving forward. Sean, man, stay safe. I hope this doesn't go too crazy, but, you know, we'll be back here again next week.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
All right, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back next week. Look for us online. I'm going to definitely be throwing on with some at least one live show this week. Look for it on our Facebook page, on our Twitter account. I'll announce it ahead of time. If you want to join in, basically anybody can join in. If you have the link, you can join. I think there's a limit. It comes up about if you get more than 200 people after that, the platform says you got to kind of like kick in a tip or something like that. But I'm going to try to make that as wide as possible. I doubt we're going to get that many people coming in, at least initially, which is fantastic. But join in. We can take little calls and stuff in the midst of it. So look forward to it. And if Sean's not doing anything, sent around twiddle his thumbs. I'll see if I can pull him on too as well. You can ask him anything you want to as well. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Looking forward to the week ahead. Stay safe, everybody. Make sure that you're kind of not overreacting, but also taking serious the best information you have. Listen to what you have coming up from Governor Wolf. Follow what's happening with the CDC. Stay away from right-wing media entirely, because those people are going to lead us to disaster. Go to where you trust. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll talk to you soon, everybody. Looks like the sun's coming out. See ya!
The system is not really geared to what we need right now, what you are asking for. That is a failing.
It is a failing.
I mean, let's admit it. The fact is, the way the system was set up is that the public health component that Dr. Redfield was talking about was a system where you put it out there in the public and a physician asks for it and you get it. The idea of anybody getting it easily, the way people in other countries are doing it, we're not set up for that. Do I think we should be? Yes, but we're not.